evening, everybody. Let's start with our motivation. So sometimes when we look around at what's going on in the world, it seems really like we're living in a loony bin. You know, people doing things that are completely so out there that you can't understand the way they're thinking. And they're doing these things motivated by ignorance, anger, and attachment. But we can't go around thinking that we're better than them, because when we look at our own thoughts, sometimes the stories we make up in our own mind are just as outrageous as the ones we see other people living and contributing to. So we have to continually say that all this dukkha, all these unsatisfactory experiences of ourself and others, are rooted in our self-grasping ignorance, in a very basic misapprehension of how things exist. So basic that we don't even know that we're misapprehending things. And yet, if we really want to have happiness, we have to root that out. And not only in our own mind, but to do our best to help others root out their ignorance as well. And so we turn to Nagarjuna and his disciple Aryadeva to please show us how to do this, keeping in mind that we're equal with all sentient beings and we're doing it for the benefit of ourselves and others. Okay, so I'm going to try to actually get through a few verses this week. We'll see, but there's the motivation. So last time we were talking about things being single and different, or single and many, one and many, and that because we can't have, there's no such thing as an inherently existent single object, because any object that we would call one is made up of parts, so therefore it can't be inherently single. And that then, because there's no inherent singles, we can't have inherent severals, because it takes many singles to make a several. Okay? So it's the same kind of thing, you know, when you look at like the person, you know, our basis of designation are the five aggregates. So, but none of the aggregates are the person. You know, the body's not me, feelings aren't me, discriminations aren't me, volitional factors aren't me, the consciousnesses aren't me. So you have a bunch of non-me's put together making me. And that can only happen when things exist by mere designation. Yeah? This can't happen if things are inherently existent. There's a bunch of not me's being put together to make me. Doesn't that seem weird? Yeah. But if things were inherently existent, it couldn't be that way. You know, me would have to be me, and that's it. Yeah, because there would be no dependence allowed. Okay. So, so the 344 was about no singleness, no plurality. So 345, okay, though they assert that where there are none, that where there are none of those things, there is singleness. Singleness does not exist since everything is threefold. So this is refuting some non-Buddhists like the Vaisheshikas. Okay, so we may think that the previous refutation was just applied to Buddhists who assert that the elements and the elemental derivatives occur simultaneously, but that these arguments don't apply to non-Buddhists who claim that a small permanent earth particle that is a single unit exists where there are no functional things apart from smallest particles, such as earth particles and so forth. So this idea, you know, kind of a scientific idea too, there's the smallest permanent, okay, unchanging, like earth particle, water particle, these kinds of things, that exists where there's no functional things apart from these, you know, permanent functional phenomena, which itself is an oxymoron, because you can't be a permanent functional phenomena. But actually, so this refutation is also geared towards the non-Buddhists who assert these kind of small permanent particles. And Aryadeva is saying that actually in their system too, even if they say it's one small unitary permanent particle, it also has three qualities, because in the Vaisheshika system, it has substantial entity, it has singleness, and it has existence. Yeah. So remember before we were saying that if something is inherent one, it can't have any characteristics, it can't have any properties. Because characteristics and properties are like parts, you know. There's more than one of them, and so you can't have an inherently existent single. Okay, so that's the non-Buddhists. Yeah, refuted them. Okay, we're going to keep on doing some more non-Buddhist stuff here. But it's very interesting because a lot of these thoughts, people today think similar kinds of things. Okay, so 346, the approach of existence, non-existence, both existence and non-existence, and neither should always be applied by those with mastery to oneness and so forth. Okay, so this is about applying reasoning which negates the four possibilities in other cases. You know, so you see this a lot in Madhyamaka reasoning. So this one is, you know, it's not existent, it's not non-existent, it's not both existent and non-existent, and it's not neither existent nor non-existent, okay? And so they give you four opportunities, and if you are investigating under, you know, the assumption that things are truly existent, then none of those four are going to hold. Okay? So initially it seems like this tetralemma kind of thing is like just kind of nonsense. What do you mean it's neither existent nor non-existent nor both nor neither? Okay, it's got to be one of them, you know? And that's what we very strongly feel. But under inherent existence, yeah, you can't find anything in any of those four ways. So they talk about the four, this tetralemma kind of thing, that this tetralemma, you find it in many different reasonings, you know. So in the diamond slivers reasoning, you find it, something isn't produced by self, it's not produced by other, it's not produced by both self and other, and it's not produced causelessly. And this one here, that he's just quoting here, existence, non-existence, both existence and non-existence, and neither. This one is, we were kind of talking about it with Jeffrey, you know, kind of a little bit, but, you know, a cause producing a result? And is that result existent? Is it at the time of the cause? Is it non-existent at the time of the cause? Is it both existent and non-existent, or is it neither? You know, because remember, when you're talking about future phenomena, you know, this has to do with the whole discussion of future phenomena. And, you know, before, like the temple, you know, okay, we're going to build a temple sometime, yeah. So is that temple something that exists or doesn't exist? Okay, so if you're examining through inherent existence, if it exists, it means you have to be able to see it. It has to have its own entity in its own time, which would mean we should be able to see it. Okay, so if the temple exists right now, then we don't need to build it because it's already there. On the other hand, if you say the temple doesn't exist, if things are inherently existent, then if the temple doesn't exist, it's never going to exist. It's a total non-existent, you know, because inherently existent things, you know, once it's non-existent, that's it. It can't change. And also inherently existent things can't arise, they can't be produced. Okay? So then the temple, it's not existent now, but it's not non-existent now. Yeah? But it's not existent, but it's not non-existent, so what is it? Well, maybe it's both. Yeah, but no, it's not that either, because then you have, you know, a collection of two oranges and they equal a tomato, you know, and that doesn't work. And they can't be neither, because that refers to some other kind of inherently existent alternative. Okay, so you wind up like that. I mean, the only thing you can posit is that there's a future temple. Okay, so the temple exists, but it doesn't exist now. There's the future of the temple. So the future of the temple, remember, is an affirming negative that is, you know, the factor where there's the substantial existence of the temple, but all the causes and conditions haven't come together yet. Okay, so the temple exists, but because if it didn't exist, you couldn't make it.
A future temple exists.
A future temple exists, but it doesn't. The temple doesn't exist now. The future temple, yes. But we can't, but in saying the temple doesn't exist, we also can't say it's totally non-existent either.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But we have to say the temple exists.
Yeah, unless you say it exists as a future temple. Yeah, but it's clearer to say a future temple. Okay, so he's recommending here that those who have mastered the meaning of suchness, suchness means emptiness, always refute phenomena being one, yeah, being different, both and neither, by applying reasonings that assert, and now he gives a list of some of the non-Buddhist assertions that these kind of tetralemma, you know, reasonings refute, okay? So there's one group at the time of the Buddha and thereafter also, called the Samkhyas. So they're the ones that say that, you know, they get stuck with this, you know, existing and non-existing, and you know, you can't say the temple exists. You can't say the temple doesn't exist. It's got to exist. You can't see it. So they, what they say to overcome this problem is that the temple exists in an unmanifest form, in its cause. Okay? Yeah? So they say that the result exists at the time of the cause, but in an unmanifest form. Okay? So then you get this whole reasoning, the diamond slivers, you know, not produced by self, others, both or neither, because they're essentially saying, you know, if they're saying that the effect exists at the time of the cause, Then they're saying the cause and effect are simultaneous. Are cause and effect simultaneous? No, they can't be. Because the cause has to cease for the effect to arise. You know? Like a seed has to cease for the sprout to arise. They can't exist at the same time. Okay? So we have to refute the Samkhyas. You know? So they have all these very humorous refutations, you know, that if, what was it? There's one about an elephant, but anybody remember? There's an example about the elephant. I can't remember what it is. But anyway, the example that I like is if the result exists at the time of the cause, yeah, then in the lunch you eat, you already have feces in an unmanifest form.
It's true.
Well, no, it's not there in an unmanifest form. Yeah? It's the future feces. Okay? Yeah? So you have to you know, refute the Samkhyas who say that the effect exists at the time of the cause, because, you know, that just makes absolutely no sense. Because if the effect is already there, then it doesn't need to arise again. And if it still needs to arise, if it still needs the cause to produce it, then it's going to arise nonstop. Yeah? Because it's still going to keep existing. You know, even though when it's produced, the cause is still going to be there. Because the result's still going to exist inside of it, so it'll still getting produced at, you know, ad infinitum. And, you know, we see that none of those happen. Okay? Then the other system he's recommending that we... yeah. Okay, that we refute are the Satanchakas, who say that the cause and effect truly exist, but the effect doesn't exist at the time of the cause. So remember, we were going through this with Jeffrey, you know, when we were doing the three times according to the Satantrikas. They're saying that the future and the past are both permanent, okay? But they also say the cause and effect truly exist, but the effect doesn't exist at the time of the cause. So, but in a world that is inherently existent, if the effect didn't exist, yeah, then it could never arise. Because if you're non-existent, you are inherently existent. You cannot be dependent on anything else. So you can't arise due to cause. So if you're non-existent, that's it. Okay? So we refute the Satantrikas. Because it is strange, isn't it, to say the future is permanent? Yeah? I mean, if the future is permanent, how can it ever arise? Because things that are permanent, they never come into being. Yeah? But they have great difficulty. You know, their way of thinking is you've always got to have something that you anchor a word to. So if you're going to say we're building the temple, there's got to be something that is the temple that you anchor that word to. Or you just say it doesn't exist. Yeah? But then you're building a non-existent temple. Okay? So that doesn't make sense. Then the third system to negate are the Nigranthas. So this is the Jains, who they exist around the same time as the Buddha. So they assert both existence and non-existence. So a thing is permanent in nature, but temporarily impermanent. Remember we went through this, you know, how we often feel about, like ourselves, for example. There is an inherent, you know, a permanent me, but then on a day-to-day basis I change. Yeah, but something can't be both permanent and impermanent, because they are mutually exclusive and a dichotomy. Okay? So you can't have that. So refute the Nigranthas And then there's some other people. I don't know what their name is, but I've heard them referred to in a few texts, who assert that though things are substantially existent, they are neither existent nor non-existent, because they can't be said to be either this or that. So these are the people who look at things and they say, it's ineffable, it's inexpressible, you know? And so it's substantially existent. If something's substantially existent, you should be able to say it's this. Well, it's substantially existent, but it's not either this or it's not that. It's some ineffable, unexpressible something, 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 you know, which basically means I don't know. But you can't say I don't know, so you make it inexpressible. So we refute those people also, okay? Yeah, because when you talk about existence and non-existence, you know, they are mutually exclusive and a dichotomy. If something exists, it's got to be either this or that. It cannot be both. Okay? And it can't be neither either. Okay? So implicit in the assertions of the Samkhyas and the Satantikas and the Nirgranthas and then these fuzzy, ineffable people, you know, is the assumption that things truly exist, that they have some kind of essence that is in them that makes them what they are, you know? And if something exists like that, then, you know, if it has that kind of essence that makes it what it is, then it can't be dependent on anything else. Because everything else we look at, if it's affected by causes and conditions, what it is changes. And if what it is changes, it can't have some kind of essence that is what makes it what it is. Yeah, because if you have an essence that makes something what it is, then it's always going to, that essence is always going to be there, and that object is always going to be there, which means that cause and effect can never function. Causes and conditions can never change that thing. It is a frozen, self-enclosed entity. But what exists like that? What exists in a way that does not relate to anything else? You know, and if you try and posit something, yeah, then you have to say something that that is perceivable by a reliable cognizer. If it's perceivable by a reliable cognizer, then it relates to something else. It relates to that reliable cognizer. Okay? So it becomes quite difficult to assert anything truly existent that is validly perceived by a reliable cognizer. Yeah.
Wouldn't that reasoning apply to every system up to the persona?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it applies all the way to the Svatantrikas and below. Because anybody who asserts inherent existence, you know, that it applies to all of them, even though they may have within that different assertions. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay. So then he recommended that we apply the reasons explained in verse 265. So I thought I would just go over verse 265 again, because it's quite interesting, you know? And these things come up again and again when you're thinking about emptiness. Okay? So the verse 265, for those who assert effects exist, so those are the Samkhyas, because remember, at the time of the cause, the effect is there. And for those who assert effects do not exist, so they're the Satantrikas that say that the effects don't exist, they're permanent. Then for either of these groups that say the effects exist or the effects don't exist, adornments like pillars and so forth for a home are purposeless. So if you can't build the home to start with, because the home is in the cause, yeah, and you're refuting production from self. And if you can't build the home also to start with, because the home's permanent, because it doesn't exist now, then to talk about furnishing the home is ridiculous. Because people with those kind of beliefs, if their beliefs were correct, couldn't even build a home. Okay? So that actually makes it quite easy. Then we don't need to decide what the building materials are, or what color paint, or... Okay? Okay. So... Okay, so the Samkhyas say that since what is non-existent can't arise, and since the result is present in the cause and potential form, the fallacy that anything arises from anything doesn't occur. Yeah, and then some Vaibhasikas say the three times are substantially existent, and they say the effects exist prior to their arising. So that's also ridiculous. How can the effect exist before it's arisen? Yeah? Does the baby exist before it's been born? Yeah? But before it's been conceived, I should say. Does the baby exist before it's been conceived? Okay. So that's kind of the Vaibhasika. And the Satanjikas say that although things are truly existent, future effects are permanent. Okay, so they are non-existent because to exist means to be present right now. So they can't produce anything. Okay, so for all of them, adornments for a future house are useless since, according to some, the house exists from the outset before it arises, in which case it would come fully furnished. And according to others, the future house is non-existent, like the child of a barren man. Okay. But for proponents of dependent arising free from inherent existence, there's no error and everything is properly established and makes sense. So we have to vote for dependent arising. Yeah? Okay. So how does dependent arising explain this so it makes sense? Well, first of all, they say the cause comes first and the cause has to cease for the effect to arise. Then they say the effect is not totally non-existent because when the seed, when the cause is approaching cessation, the result is approaching arising, is approaching production. But the result that's approaching production, you can't see it. It doesn't exist yet. It exists in name only because it's merely labeled in dependence on the principal cause existing, but all the other conditions not coming together yet. Okay? So we talk about, like, the seed, you know, the seed is in the process of ceasing at the time that the sprout is in the process of arising. Okay. At the time the seed is ceasing, the seed exists. But at the time that the sprout is arising, is the sprout existent right now? Does it have an entity? It's approaching arising, but it hasn't arisen yet, so it doesn't have its own entity yet. But we can't say that the seed is totally non-existent, because if it were, then we couldn't say the sprout is totally non-existent, because if it were, then we couldn't say the sprout is approaching production. Okay? So you have to have a way of saying that, you know, the potential for the sprout exists, but the sprout itself hasn't come into being. So that's the way the Prasangikas do it, you know, by saying that a future phenomena is impermanent. So therefore, it can be produced. But it doesn't exist right now, because if it did, it wouldn't need to arise again. Okay?
But the we comes, it feels like nothing exists.
Yeah, sometimes when you do the analysis, then it feels like, well, what is there then? Mm-hmm. Yeah? And then this is where you have to really go into dependent arising and understand that even though things are not findable when you search for them with ultimate analysis, they appear when you're not analyzing, and they exist by mere designation, by mere fabrication, by conception. So they give the example of the snake and the rope, okay? And I was, you know, this was in one of the things I was working on this week, and the example hit me in a very different way this time when I was working on it. So, okay, it's dim, yeah, like back there, and you look, and there's something that's long and thin and striped, and it's coiled like that. And it's dim and you can't see well. But boy, it sure looks like a snake. So you say, it's a snake! Ah! And you go screaming out the door, you know, running around the abbey, it's a snake! It's a snake! You know? Okay. And the poor snake is like scared to death. okay? But there's no snake there because actually it's a rope. It's a coiled rope that's striped, that's just in that place. And because you can't see well, the rope appears to be a snake. And because it appears to be a snake, you label snake. And once you label snake, then all this other stuff comes with the label snake. Yeah? It's poisonous, it's going to bite me, I'm going to die, or I'm going to have a limb amputated, or maybe it'll eat me, maybe it's one of those snakes that eats human beings whole. You know, no, there are snakes like that. I've seen pictures of them. And your mind completely goes crazy with fear. Okay? In actual fact, there is no snake there. Yeah. There was a rope that was the basis of designation and the term snake that was designated on it. Yeah. And that snake was merely, it was fabricated by conception, wasn't it? Made up by the conceptual mind and imputed on top of that rope. And then, you know, you're waking everybody up at 3 o'clock in the morning because there's a snake in Ananda Hall and it's going to eat the cats, and, you know, or it'll eat you or, you know, something. Okay? In the same way, yeah, you have the five aggregates. Body, okay, feelings, which are just feelings of happiness, suffering. Discriminations, which is being able to identify things. The grab bag of volitional factors, which are many kinds of emotions and miscellaneous mental factors. And then your six kinds of consciousnesses, your five sense consciousnesses and your mental consciousness. Okay? So I just listed all five of those. Okay? Did I say person or I or self anywhere? No. So there is absolutely no person in those five. Is there? There's no person. No person in those five. But when the five are together in a collection and you look, there's the appearance of a person and you say, oh, there's a person. There's Joe, or there's me. Okay? And In actual fact, if you look at these two examples, the snake and the rope, there is absolutely no snake in that rope. And there is absolutely no person in those aggregates. None. Zero. And the snake being imputed on the rope and the person being imputed on the aggregates, that process of imputation or designation or conceptual fabrication is exactly the same. The mind having an appearance of something, conceiving it as something, and giving that name. The process of conceptualization and imputation is exactly the same. The difference is, the only difference, is that the rope can't function as a snake, whereas the collection of the aggregates, when imputed, can function as a person. Does that feel weird to you? Like, wait a minute. Okay, I get it. The snake's, just merely designated on the rope. That's true. There's absolutely no snake in that rope. But there's something in the aggregates that the person. Yeah? There's got to be something in the aggregates that the person. Don't you feel that way?
Function as a person, of
course. Yeah, otherwise it wouldn't be able to function as a person, and you wouldn't be able to call it a person, and it would be total mistaken things, just like the snake on the rope. So there's got to be something there in that collection of aggregates that makes it an acceptable basis of designation to say person. Doesn't it? Doesn't it? You're struggling with this.
Is it just simply ignorant habit? Like, why does that appearance come? It's not, the thing isn't there. Why does the appearance be so strong and so sure?
Well, you can't say there's no person there altogether.
I know, but not the person I'm thinking is there.
Yeah, but you can't say there's no person. Because you say, I walk, I think, I do things. When you have that collection of the aggregates, it performs a function. And so, we say that there's a person there. Yeah? Joe's sleeping, Joe's thinking, Joe's creating karma, he's experiencing the result of his karma. Joe's there.
But that's not the one I'm having the problem with.
What are you having the one that's the problem with?
It's the one that I think is beyond that.
What do you mean beyond that?
Beyond that conventional one. I'm adding
So you can see that the conceptual, just the label Joe or I is a conceptual fabrication. Just that label. Then, on top of that, that one conceptual fabrication. Then we add our whole story about Joe, and Joe hit me when I was 3 years old and he threw sand at me, but then he was so nice to me and we dated in high school and I forgave him and blah 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 blah, Okay, so there, but you see that one, that's really amplified, complete garbage. But just the label Joe already is, we're imputing something on it. Because there's no Joe there in the aggregates. But you can't say there's no Joe altogether, because he has a passport and a driver's license and he has to pay taxes and he has a birth certificate. So, when you have pieces of paper, you better exist. No, but Joe does things, doesn't he? He accumulates karma. He experiences the result. But when we look at who is that Joe that's doing that, it's like a snake totally, conceptually fabricated on a rope. Because there's no Joe in there. Okay? So, this is really something to think about. And if this doesn't make you uncomfortable, you know, at some level, yeah, it's like, wait a minute. There's got to be somebody there. Otherwise, I could call those aggregates snake. You know, it would be just as made up. There's got to be something in there that makes it Joe and not snake.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. But you can't find what that thing is anywhere. Yeah? You cannot find it anywhere. Okay. Hold on to that one for a while. Okay. But you can't say Joe's non-existent. Okay. So they say this is the most difficult thing to realize about the prasangika view of emptiness, that while the basis of designation is completely empty of existing from its own side, you know, as a proper, as, you know, the thing, as the object that's being labeled, yeah, still, in spite of the unfindability of the object being designated in the basis, still there's a dependent appearance of the object that's been designated, and that appearance exists. Okay? But the person exists only at the level of appearance that is based on that made up fabrication designating a person there. Okay? So there's not a truly existent person there, and there's not nobody there. There's somebody, but that somebody is just a mere appearance. So they say, what is the person? Mere name, mere convention. Mere designation. That's the only way the person exists, merely by there being a designation, a conception. You know, it's our conceptual mind that puts the pieces together and says, oh, I'm going to make that into a new object. That must be a person. Okay, but without somebody's mind putting things together and labeling them, yeah, you can't say that thing exists. You can't say something exists independent of it being conceptually designated. Okay, so think about that. It is so weird. Yeah? And one part of the mind goes, how can that possibly be? Especially because we look around and everything looks truly existent to us. You know, what do you mean conceptual designation? What kind of rubbish is that? I know Venerable Somten when I see her. She's right there. And so is Venerable Jigme, and so is Venerable Jampa. Yeah, they're all right there, and they're who they are. You can't mix them up with each other. Yeah, no way. Yeah, And there are real people there. Sometimes I like them, sometimes they drive me crazy. Yeah? And that's also from their side. Yeah? If I like them, it's because from their side they're good. If they drive me crazy, it's because from their side they're crazy. Yeah? That's the way we look at the world, isn't it? Everything is out there, completely objective. And we use that to prove, well, you know, like you're in this debate and they say, well, okay, if you say inherent existence exists, prove it. And all you can say is, because I see it. That's all you can say. Because as soon as you start using reasoning, none of the reasoning can prove it. In fact, reasoning only proves the opposite of it. So the only thing you're left is, but I see it. But it doesn't correspond to reasoning. So that means that my mind that's seeing it is out to lunch. Yeah. My mind that's seeing that is hallucinating something that isn't there. That's why Lama Yeshe always used to say, you don't need to take drugs, you're already hallucinating. Because we are. Yeah. Because we're inventing people and objects and things where there's no truly existent thing there. Okay? So why does it, then we go and we say, well, why does imputing truly exist? Why? So what? Yeah, so what? If I call that rope a snake, so what? It scares me for a minute, then I figure it out, then I'm stopped scared. So what are you saying? You know, oh, there's no Maitri in those aggregates over there. So what? There's still Maitri, and she's sweet, and she purrs, you know, except when she's in a bad mood, you know, because Mudita's bugging her. But generally, she's pretty okay, you know, because I see her, so she's got to be there. Yeah. She's not merely imputed. Are you merely imputed? She says, no, I'm here. I'm here. Look at me. Yeah? Just like we do. Yeah? Somebody says to you, do you exist by merely being designated? And are you a conceptual fabrication? I am, excuse me, I am not a conceptual fabrication. You think you are calling me a conceptual fabrication? Yeah, I'm me. Yeah. So why does that cause us problem? Yeah, because then, you know, we think there's a real me there. Yeah, and I'm going to show everybody there's a real me. So if you don't think I'm real, I'm going to punch you in the nose. Yeah, then you'll believe I'm real. Or I'll do something else. Yeah. And if you're nice, yeah, then I think you're great, and then I want you to think I'm real, so I'll act a certain way and you'll fall in love with me. Yeah? So, you know, our mind is just, it's hallucinating. Are you hallucinating?
She's
trying. Okay. So.
What scares me with this is, you know, someone like Stalin could have used this reasoning when he's murdering these nice people. Well, they're just conceptual.
They're just conceptual fabrication. See, that's going. Okay, this is a good question. That Stalin could have just said, well, they're conceptual fabrication. You know, or ISIS, they're just conceptual fabrication. Chop off their head, burn them alive, it doesn't matter. Okay. But see, that's going to the extreme of nihilism. Because that's thinking there's nothing there. Okay. So that's, you know, and the nihilists and the absolutists think in the same way. They both think it's got to either be inherently existent or totally non-existent. Okay? So either there's a real person in there and we're killing real people, or they're just a conceptual elaboration. There's nobody there, so it doesn't matter what I do. Yeah. So both of those are extreme wrong views. Yeah. The worst of those two views is the nihilistic one, because the one that thinks nothing exists also negates the functioning of karma and its effects. And if you negate the functioning of karma and its effects, then you give yourself license to do whatever you want, because there's no sentient beings out there that you're really affecting. They're all just appearances made up by mind, so they don't really have feelings.
So tell me how
they're all just existing in my mind, like dreams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you kill somebody in a dream, well, it doesn't matter, it's only a dream, nobody's actually hurt. But thinking like that with people when you're awake is very dangerous, because you create a lot of negative karma that way.
Is the mind thinking like that see itself as just a conceptual appearance?
Huh?
Does the mind thinking like that see itself also just a conceptual appearance?
Well, like, yes, it's got to. You know, that the mind is, you know, the mind that is designating these things, that mind also exists by mere designation, by mere conceptual fabrication. Then you go, well, who's doing the fabricating? I want to talk to that guy anyway. Yeah. But you can't pinpoint one person who's doing the fabricating, and that, you know, everything that person designates, you know, if that person, if Susan designates it, then it must exist. No, you can't point out anything like that.
My mind goes always to that place. Like, what the heck? Why all of that stuff?
Yeah. Why? Because the opposite is holding everything as true existent. It's like I explained, true existence is one extreme, and the nihilism is another extreme.
It's more like my mind goes, that mind, why has created all that samsara and nirvana?
Well, that's the ignorance. That's, you know, what created all the samsara? It's the ignorance.
But who created the ignorance?
Nobody. It exists beginninglessly. Does something have to have an initial creation? Can anything have an initial creation? Are you going to, you want to trace back ignorance, you know, to 5 million, three countless great zillion eons ago?
I know, but why does it exist then? Where it's coming from?
That's the previous moment of ignorance is where it comes from. Yeah? You're looking for an absolute external creator who went, I think I'll create ignorance. Poof.
I know, but like...
That's, yeah? So you got to get rid of that thought, because that thought is a wrong conception. There's no original creator of anything. It's this whole thing. It's dependent arising. There are causes and conditions, and therefore things exist and things continue. There's no absolute beginning to anything that you can point to. Because there's always got, whatever you point to, there's always got to be a cause before it that makes it arise. And then that thing needs a cause before it, which needs a cause before it.
It's crazy.
No, it's not crazy. It makes sense. You just have to, you know, you got to think about the square root of 2. You got to think about your number lines. Math class is really good, you know, for this whole idea of infinity. Yeah, your number line, you know, -1, -2, -3, never ends. What?
The space.
Space also. +1, +2, +3, never ends. You look out in space. Is there a brick wall where space ends? If there is, then what's on? There's got to be something on the other side of the brick wall. Mm-hmm. So then space hasn't ended.
Whatever.
It's your conceptual mind that's making the problem.
And it feels safer if we can find something to have.
Yeah.
That's the creepy feeling.
Yes. I feel that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you're really stuck, because if there were an original creator who created ignorance, then what are you going to do?
I'd talk to him.
And he's going to be shaking in his boots. This is one venerable yeshi talks to you. Yes?
So what keeps going around in my head is that quote from Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes, which is, when you eliminate the impossible, whatever's left, no matter how improbable, is the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's that. Good Sherlock Holmes. When you eliminate everything that's impossible, whatever is left, however improbable, is the truth. Yeah. Yeah, that's very good. Okay. Any more questions? Should I try for another verse? Okay, let's see. Okay, so 347. When the continuum is misapprehended, things are said to be permanent. Similarly, when composites are misapprehended, things are said to exist. Okay, so this is... Okay, so somebody asked the question, kind of what we were asking. If things don't have inherent existence, why do people think they do? Okay, and the answer is there's no valid reason. Yeah, there's no valid reason. But the thing is that when something lasts for like 3 days, then our mind thinks it's the same thing. Yeah? So the problem is we're not able to posit continuums. We're not able to posit collections. Yeah, that's what the problem is. So, you know, if we see something existing for 3 days, then we feel compelled to say, well, what exists now also existed before, because we have the same name for it, so it must have existed before. Yeah, we don't call it another name, so it must be the same thing. Okay? So His Holiness often says that when people see the continuum of the person, you know, you see a person continue from day to day, that then that's why you assert that there's a permanent Atman, because there's got to be some permanent thing in that person because you see them every day. Okay? So there's an inability to understand exactly what a continuum is. You know? Then this whole thing of it arising, abiding, and ceasing simultaneously. Yeah? Whereas we think it arises, then it stays like it is for a while, and then it ceases. But how can it be like that? Because if it's arising, it has the condition for change in it right away. It can't be impermanent when it's arising, permanent when it's abiding, and then go back to being impermanent again when it's ceasing. Okay? So if it's changing all the time, then, you know, if it looks the same, it must be the same. Yeah? And if it's different from moment to moment, then first of all, it should look different. And second of all, why don't we have different names for it? Yeah, if we call it the same thing, it should be the same thing. So it's interesting, you know, because you think of a town, like you think of Newport, Okay. And we say Newport has existed since, I don't know, sometime in the 19th century. Okay? So, we think of Newport. You know, there's Newport. Yeah? Newport is abiding. It arose in the 19th century. We hope it never ceases. Right now it's abiding. And so, yeah, so we think while it's abiding, it's not changing because, you know, we go in there, you go in there. Whenever you go in there, it basically looks the same. So it's abiding. Yeah? But actually, totally everything about that town has changed. Not even from one time you go in there to another time you go in there. But even while you're there, it's changing. Yeah. And then, what is it that is Newport? Is it the buildings? Is it the land? Is it the people? Yeah. What exactly is Newport when you say Newport's there? What are you referring to? What's there? Yeah. So in a conventional world where things exist by mere designation, all of this kind of works. We can say I'm going to Newport. Yeah. But in a world of inherent existence, if you say I'm going to Newport, what do you mean by Newport? What's Newport? The dirt, the buildings, the people? Which moment of Newport are you going to? It's changing moment by moment. Tell me which Newport you're going to. Yeah, Newport at 10 o'clock, at 10:01, at 10:02. Which Newport are you going to? And who are you? Who's going? Yeah? Just who do you think you are who's going to Newport? Yeah? And exactly what is the going that you're doing? What is this action of going? Where does it exist? Show me going. Yeah. So if things were inherently existent, we should be able to push like this and somebody should be able to come up with some kind of answer that's reasonable. What can you say? All you can say is I'm going to Newport. That's all. Okay. Yeah? So when you don't use ultimate analysis, then it works fine. But when you use ultimate analysis, everything gets very confusing. Okay? So there's nothing wrong with the fact that we label things. The problem, because labeling can be convenient, you know? The problem is when we forget that we labeled something, we forget that we merely designated that thing, and instead we think it has some essence from its own side. Yeah, because if it has some essence from its own side, that gives me justification to relate to it in certain ways. Yeah. If it has goodness from its own side, then I am justified in going after it, no matter how I treat other people. If it's threatening to me in there from its own side, then I have justification to beat it up. Yeah. So this is why grasping an inherent existence is the root of our samsara, why it's the root of the afflictions. Because when we hold things as solid like that, then it seems very reasonable to have attachment and aversion. Yeah. And then we have all of our justifications for, you know, all of our self-centered actions right there.
Especially when we label things mine.
Yep.
This dangerous label of all.
Yeah, that label, mine, is a killer. Literally. Literally. Yeah. I mean, if you look what's going on in the world, my side, mm-hmm. my country, my group, Yeah.
It's quite interesting. I just got a feeling of sadness, like.
Yeah.
Like it's, oh my God, that means I'm grieving all the time.
That you're breathing all the
grieving.
Time. Grieving. Oh, because things are changing?
Changing.
Yeah, but remember, things can also change for the better. Otherwise, how can you become Buddha? Okay. So that's because things, also because things are impermanent, because they're conditioned, therefore we can become a Buddha. Yeah. If we were inherently existent who we are, we couldn't change. Impossible to change.
And returning to what we're talking about with Stalin, and I think it's only possible to kill another person or a group of people if you hold them as truly existent.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't hold them as truly existent, there really wouldn't be much reason to harm them, would there? You know, unless you saw that for some reason it was for their benefit. But otherwise, there would be no reason to. Okay. Well, we did two verses. No, we did three verses. Okay.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losung's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Guru Ratna Mandala Kandiyataya. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness, powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi. May it stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and non-violent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Yatravastiya be in the west floor.